1 o'clock having arrived, I'm going to call the February 4th, 2021 meeting of the Taxes Committee to order under rules 10.01 for the public. Again, if you would like to see the materials that are going to be presented at this meeting, the best way to do that is go to the Minnesota House of Representatives. Then go to committee list, go to taxes, and on the right-hand side, down towards the bottom of that window, you will see all the materials. And also, members, you should have received everything in your calendar, but also that's another good spot, of course, to find the materials for this meeting. So with that, I think we're ready for the roll call. Ms. Griska, if you would please call the roll.
Marquardt.
Present.
Marquardt, present. Lislegard.
Present.
Lislegard, present. David.
David's present.
David's present. Abaje.
Present.
Abaje, present. Carlson.
Carlson, present.
Carlson, present. Detmer.
Detmer, present.
Detmer, present. Garofalo. Garofalo. Gomez. Gomez. Her.
Present.
Her, present. Hertas. Hertas. Howard.
Present.
Howard, present. McDonald.
McDonald, present.
McDonald, present. Miller.
Present.
Miller, present. Moran.
Moran, present. Moran, present.
Present. Mortensen. Mortensen. Robbins.
Present.
Robbins, present. Sandel.
Present.
Sandel, present. Schultz. Schultz. Stevenson.
Present.
Stevenson, present. Swadzinski. Swadzinski. Joachim.
Present.
Joachim, present. Garofalo. Gomez. Hertas.
Hertas, present.
Hertas, present. Mortensen. Schultz. Swadzinski. We have a quorum.
Thank you very much, Ms. Griska. We have February 2nd, 2021 minutes. Representative Lislegard, are you ready to move those minutes?
So moved, Mr. Chair.
Representative Lislegard moves approval of the February 2nd, 2021 minutes. I'll open it up for any discussion or comments. Seeing none, I will ask you to temporarily unmute as we vote. All those in favor of approving the February 2nd, 2021 minutes of the Taxes Committee, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, say nay. The motion does prevail. The February 2nd, 2021 minutes are approved. And also like to note that Representative Swedzinski and Representative Garofalo are in attendance. So members, Minnesota is facing one of its biggest challenges health-wise and economically-wise in its state history. And we know that in Minnesota, the COVID-19 pandemic has resulted in over 6,000 deaths. And as of today, over 200,000 lost jobs since the beginning of the pandemic. And we also know that economically that this pandemic have hit people and businesses disproportionately. The less that you earned, probably the hardest you've been hit. You've been hit the hardest by this pandemic. And we also know that a lot of small businesses, especially in the leisure and hospitality area, have also been hit really hard. So I was encouraged to see Governor Walz's COVID-19 recovery budget. What I really liked was that it recognizes the fact that we absolutely have to take action if we are going to get people and businesses and students back on track. We just, the status quo won't do. We're going to have to take action. And the governor's priorities that he's laid out in the budget do just that. And it's making sure that students get caught up, making investments in working families and making investments in small businesses to grow the economy. And another really good thing is that unlike the federal government, Governor Walz pays for those important recovery investments for students and working families and businesses. So today's meeting is how does the governor pay for those important recovery investments? And that is what the scope of this meeting is today. So we do have Revenue Commissioner Doty here, Assistant Commissioners Fishman and Byers. And so what I would like is for them to present the tax portion of the budget, and then we will take questions at the end. And we will have plenty of time for questions and or comments at the end. Then also my intention is that once we get the language of the bill, which is coming shortly, I'm anticipating we would probably hear the language of the tax portions of the governor's budget in 2 weeks, probably two Thursdays from today. And that's when we would take public testimony. So we do have a couple letters, if you will note, in your materials on the budget. So I'd like to draw your attention to that. But we're not going to take public testimony today. So there will be a chance. That'll be in 2 weeks where folks will have a chance to take public testimony on the governor's tax portions of his budget. So with that, Commissioner Doty, welcome to the committee. And if you'd please proceed with going over the tax policy of the governor's budget.
Good afternoon, Chair Marquardt and members of the committee. Thank you for having us here today. For the record, my name is Robert Doty, and I am the commissioner at the Minnesota Department of Revenue. And with me today is Assistant Commissioner Tracy Fishman and our Legislative Director, Joanna Bayers. Tracy began last month as our Assistant Commissioner for Tax Policy and Public Engagement. Next slide. As you all know, last week, Governor Walz presented Minnesota's COVID-19 recovery budget recommendations for fiscal years 2022 and 2023. Today, we will give an overview of the priorities and investments made in the governor's budget and provide more detail about the provisions included in the tax bill. Though we will be addressing at a high level financing and spending aspects of the budget, as expected, our focus is the tax bill. We anticipate the legislative language for the tax bill will be introduced within the next 2 weeks, as Chair Markwart just mentioned. Next slide. Understanding the overall math related to the governor's budget proposal is actually fairly simple. We start with a proposed deficit for the next biennium of $1.28 billion. The challenge begins with how to address the deficit. The governor's budget recognizes that we need to do more than simply address the deficit and balance the budget. Instead, we must respond to the impacts of COVID-19, which require investments targeted at those who have been hit the hardest from the pandemic, including our children, working families, and small businesses. The governor is proposing $1.3 billion in net targeted investments, including $150 million in spending reductions. In order to make the math work, you must go to the other side of the ledger for balance. As you can see, the governor recommends using the carryover from the current year, part of the state's budget reserve, and an amount from the stadium reserve. The final balancing item is additional revenue of $1.66 billion. This process will leave $460 million on the bottom line and $847 million in the budget reserve. Next slide. Minnesotans have met the challenges of COVID-19 pandemic as they always do when faced with hardship, with grit and resiliency. But not every Minnesotan has been hit equally. The pandemic hit our working families, students, and small businesses particularly hard. That's why Minnesota's COVID-19 recovery budget supports working families, ensures our students catch up on learning, and throws a lifeline to small business. Governor Walz is prioritizing supporting small businesses and driving economic recovery. Small businesses are the lifeline of Minnesota communities across the state, but Minnesota's small businesses and workers are bearing a large burden on the COVID-19 pandemic in order to protect their entire community amid restrictions that are saving lives. The second priority is ensuring our students catch up on learning. Every student deserves an educational experience that values who they are and supports them as they reach their highest potential, both in and out of school. The third priority is supporting working families. As I mentioned earlier, not every Minnesotan was hit by the COVID-19 pandemic equally. Many across the state, including all of us right now, are able to work from home in order to stay safe. But for others, this simply is not an option. Essential workers and those without access to high-speed internet faced additional healthcare, and economic challenges. These Minnesotans deserve additional support. Next slide. The COVID-19 pandemic has upended lives and communities, as we have discussed. Minnesota's COVID-19 recovery budget makes strategic investments while balancing the budget by asking large and profitable corporations and the wealthiest Minnesotans to pay their fair share so our students, working families, and small businesses have a fair shot. Next slide. As previously discussed, Governor Walz recommends generating $1.636 billion of tax revenue in the fiscal 22-23 biennium. The governor's budget generates $967.9 million of revenue in fiscal 22 and $668.4 million in fiscal year 23. The tax bill includes provisions that first ask those who can to pay their fair share. It invests in working families and small businesses. It raises revenue to combat youth nicotine addiction and invests in education. And with that, I'm going to ask Assistant Commissioner Fishman to begin by discussing some of the investments and revenue provisions for individual income tax.
Thank you, Commissioner Doty. Assistant Commissioner Fishman.
Yes, thank you, Chair Markwart. And for the record, again, my name is Tracy Fishman. I am the new Assistant Commissioner at the Minnesota Department of Revenue, and I appreciate the opportunity to testify before you on the governor's tax proposal. Many low and middle income families have not seen their wages rise while the cost of living has increased. The state's Working Family Credit provides working families and households with a refundable tax credit to help with the many financial constraints they face. This program, which also exists at the federal level as the Earned Income Tax Credit, is an important source of financial stability for low and moderate income working families with children. In 2016, Minnesota tax filers claimed $249 million in working family credits, of which $44.3 million offset tax liability, and the remaining $204.8 million was paid as a refund. The average credit was $768. These refunds helped put food on tables, cover housing costs, and meet myriad other basic needs for households. The credits equal a percentage of earned income up to a maximum credit amount and are phased out when the claimant's total income exceeds a threshold. The maximum credit amounts and income levels at which the credits are phased out vary depending on the number of children in the household, whether it's no children, one child, two children, and three or more children, and whether the claimants are married. Both the maximum credit and the phase out threshold are adjusted annually for inflation. This proposal changes the working family credit calculation to increase the amount of the credit for Minnesotans that are currently eligible for the tax credit. All of the credit rates are increased proportionally by about 18%, and the phase-out rates were increased proportionally so that the benefit is applicable to current credit recipients and does not change other qualifications. The income thresholds are unchanged. Under this proposal, approximately 313,000 households would see an average increase in the tax credit of approximately $160. No one would receive a lower tax credit. This proposal also allows taxpayers with an individual tax identification number, or ITIN, to qualify for the working family credit as long as they meet the income and other eligibility requirements for the credit. Under current law, a taxpayer generally must be eligible for the federal earned income tax credit in order to receive the state working family credit. Taxpayers filing an income tax return with an ITIN are not eligible currently for the federal credit and therefore cannot receive the working family credit. ITINs are numbers that are issued by the Internal Revenue Service to individuals who are not eligible for a Social Security number but are required and do file taxes. They are used exclusively for the purpose of filing taxes. These workers pay Minnesota taxes, but do not receive the credit. By including these Minnesotans, we would reduce poverty and economic hardship for these families and their children and contribute to a more equitable tax system. An additional 10,800 returns could qualify for the working family credit as a result of this change. These households would also qualify for the recommended increase in amounts of the credit. Next slide, please. Expanding the first tier of individual income tax. This proposal would increase the lower income threshold for the second tier to $29,270 a year for an individual, $21,400 a year for married filing separate, and $36,030 a year for a head of household, or $42,800 a year for a married couple filing jointly. This means that taxpayers with their last dollar of income in the second tier will see a reduction in tax as more of their income is taxed at the first tier rate of 5.5% rather than 6.8%. The lower income thresholds for the third tier bracket are reduced to offset the tax reduction from expanding the first tier. Returns with income in the third tier bracket or higher will have no change in tax. The proposal would decrease the threshold to $86,620 a year for single tax filer, $77,005 a year for married filing separate, $131,230 a year for head of household, and $154,010 a year for married filing jointly. Over 1 million households would have an average decrease in tax of $36 per year. This proposal targets households with income in the second tier. This provision, combined with other parts of the governor's proposal, support our state's recovery, working families, and contribute to making our tax code more progressive. Angel Tax Credit. The Angel Tax Credit Program is Minnesota's primary economic development tool for assisting early stage businesses and is administered by the Department of Employment and Economic Development, or DEED, as part of their commitment to fostering innovation in the state. Minnesota has earned its reputation as one of the best states for businesses by encouraging the growth and economic competitiveness of businesses. As high-tech startups look outside the confines of traditional hubs like Silicon Valley, Minnesota has the opportunity to provide incentives that will encourage job growth and technical expertise in the state. The program is also an important tool for wealth creation in communities across the state. Since its inception, DEED has sought to broaden the base of individuals, communities, and businesses that benefit from the program. As a result of past changes to the program, in 2019, 32% of the number of businesses that received investment were in targeted groups, including businesses owned by people of color, women-owned business, and or businesses in headquartered in Greater Minnesota. Next slide, property taxes. The governor proposes,
Assistant Commissioner, you're muted. Okay, there you go.
My apologies, my husband is a teacher and he just took a call from a student. The governor proposes allowing individual taxpayer identification number, also referred to as ITIMS, to qualify for homestead status. Homestead status conveys several benefits to homeowners, including lower tax rates and qualification for the property tax refund. The intent of homestead classification is to recognize that homeowners bring value and stability to cities, school districts, and counties. Current law requires taxpayers to have a Social Security number in order to obtain homestead status. The governor's proposal will provide greater parity between individuals with an ITIN and Social Security number. This proposal makes 1,900 more homeowners eligible for a property tax refund by allowing Minnesotans with ITINs to qualify for homestead status. Next slide, please. Fifth-tier income tax. As we noted earlier, the COVID-19 pandemic has affected all Minnesotans, but not everybody has been hit by the COVID-19 pandemic equally. The Minnesota COVID-19 recovery budget makes strategic investments in our people, small businesses, and profitable corporations, and the wealthiest Minnesotans to pay their fair share to manage this crisis moment and come out strong. Under current law, individual income is taxed at four different rates that are applied to brackets of income. The highest bracket of income is taxed at 9.85% for income of more than $276,000 for married joint filers, $220,730 for head of household, $166,040 for single filers, and $138,100 for married filing separate. The proposal establishes a fifth-tier income tax rate of 10.85% for incomes above $1 million for married couples filing jointly, $750,000 for head of household, and $500,000 for single tax filers. Over 21,000 households would have an average increase in tax of $8,072 per return. This number of returns represents the top 0.7% of returns, so under 1% of returns in Minnesota. Capital gains tax. When a taxpayer sells a capital asset, such as stocks, a home, or business assets, the difference between the sales prices and the asset's basis is either a capital gain or a loss. The gain or loss on an asset held for more than 1 year is considered long-term. The federal government taxes most type of long-term capital gains or investment income at a preferential lower rate than other types of income. Minnesota currently does not provide a separate rate for capital gains. Minnesota includes net capital gains income in taxable income and subjects it to the same tax rates as apply to other income. The proposal adds an additional income tax rate or surcharge that applies to long-term capital gains and qualified dividends of individuals, trusts, and estates. The surcharge is 1.5% on capital gains and dividend income over $500,000 up to $1 million and 4% on income over $1 million for individuals, trusts, and estates. Capital gains are generally reported by higher income taxpayers. Minnesota filers with incomes over $100,000 reported about 86% of all capital gains income in tax year 2016. Filers with income over $500,000 reported about 57% of the capital gains, and the average gain was $234,437. Approximately 7,000 households would have an average increase in tax of $30,000 per return. I will now turn it back over to Commissioner Doty, who will continue with the business portions of this proposal.
Thank you, Assistant Commissioner Fishman. And now, Commissioner Doty.
Thank you, Chair Marquardt, committee. Continuing with business taxes. The first proposal relates to previously taxed foreign income. This proposal creates an addition to foreign income that has been repatriated to the United States. The 2017 Federal Tax Cuts and Jobs Act, or the TCJA, changed federal treatment of certain foreign earnings and profits. Deferred foreign earnings were deemed to be includable in taxable income and subject to a one-time transition tax. This category of foreign income is defined in the Internal Revenue Code as Section 965 income. This pool of income was accrued by controlled foreign corporations, or CFCs, since the 1986 repatriation holiday through December of 2017. The TCJA also created a current year inclusion of a new pool of foreign income, global intangible low-taxed income, or GILTI, which addresses profit shifting concerns in the new territorial tax system. GILTI is taxed at the federal level, regardless of whether it is repatriated to the United States. This proposal would continue Minnesota's approach of taxing repatriated foreign income that was in effect prior to the changes included in the 2019 tax bill. The income inclusion applies to both the foreign income that was previously taxed by the federal government under Section 965, as well as the new GILTI income. This tax would apply to foreign income received by both corporate and pass-through businesses and is effective retroactively to 2016 for 965 income and 2018 for GILTI. These amounts reported as an addition on the state return would be eligible for the corporate dividends received deduction. Corporate tax rate. Minnesota currently taxes profits of C corporations at a flat rate of 9.8%. The corporate franchise tax applies to all C corporations that make sales in Minnesota, not just Minnesota-based corporations. For corporations that do business in more than one state, the rate is applied to income that is apportioned to Minnesota based on the in-state percentage of sales. This proposal increases the corporate franchise tax rate from 9.8% to 11.25%. The increase would be effective beginning in tax year 2021. The minimum fee remains unchanged. The estate tax exclusion. The proposal reinstates the estate tax exclusion amount at $2.7 million. A decrease from the current exclusion of $3 million. The amount the exclusion was set at in 2017. The proposal also adjusts the small business and farm property estate tax exclusion in order to maintain the current $5 million maximum exclusion for those estates. In other words, when the estate tax exclusion decreases to $2.7 million, the small business and farm exclusion will increase to $2.3 million, with the sum of the two remaining constant at $5 million. This proposal would maintain that $5 million exclusion. Next slide. The cigarette tax. The governor recommends raising the cigarette tax by $1 per pack. The current tax rate is $3.04, and the last major increase was in 2013. In 2017, the annual inflation adjustment for the tax was repealed. The purpose of the 2013 cigarette tax increase and inflator was to make strategic investments in healthcare, education, and jobs to reduce smoking in Minnesota, particularly among its youth. The COVID-19 pandemic has shown the need for tobacco prevention and cessation, as current and former smokers are at increased risk for severe illness from COVID-19. To make matters worse, communities targeted by the tobacco industry, including Black and Indigenous Minnesotans, are some of the hardest hit by COVID-19. The vapor tax. The governor recommends creating a new gross receipts tax to be collected at retail. This tax will be equal to 35% of the gross receipts from retail sales of nicotine solutions and devices. The governor also recommends the tobacco tax to electronic delivery devices. This tax is collected from distributors and is equal to 95% of the wholesale sales price of the tobacco product. Currently, nicotine solution or vapor solution consumed through devices are subject to this tax, but the devices are not subject to tax when sold separately from the solution. According to the 2019 Minnesota Student Survey, 1 in 4 Minnesota 11th graders reported using an e-cigarette in the past 30 days. That represents a 54% increase from the 2016 survey, in which 17% of 11th graders reported vaping. Research also shows that youth are more price sensitive, and this proposal will increase the price. Lastly, to bring greater parity between our brick and mortar shops and online retailers, the governor is requiring online retailers of tobacco products collect and remit Minnesota's tobacco product excise tax and vapor gross receipts excise tax. By requiring all online retailers of tobacco products to collect and remit consumer use tax, the playing field would be made more level for Minnesota businesses. Next slide. Modifying qualified data center exemption for software. The governor is recommending modifying the sales tax exemption for qualified data center software purchases. Under current law, the sales tax exemption for qualified data centers applies to purchases of enterprise information technology equipment, electricity used to operate or maintain a qualified data center, and software for use in the qualified data center, including the corresponding software maintenance agreements. The tax bill narrows the sales tax exemption by first decreasing the period for exemption from 20 years to 5 years, and limiting the refund from 100% to 50% of the sales tax paid on all software purchases after June 30th, 2021. This tax expenditure has continued to grow well beyond what was originally anticipated when enacted in 2011 and modified in 2013. The 2018 tax expenditure report estimated that the qualified data center exemption would cost $70 million in fiscal 2018. The 2018 budget and economic forecast published in December indicated that sales tax refund claims were forecasted to be over $100 million greater than the prior forecast, largely due to qualified data centers. Reinstating an exemption for school fundraising. The governor is recommending reinstating the sales tax exemption for fundraising sales for educational and social nonprofit organizations for people under the age of 18. Prior to July 2019, fundraising sales for these organizations were tax exempt, provided the proceeds from the activities were not deposited with the school district treasurer. A 2019 law a 2019 law change to conform with federal accounting standards required fundraising sales made by schools and school-run groups for extracurricular activities to be deposited with the school district treasurer. The 2019 law change created an unintended effect of negating the sales tax exemption for certain fundraising activities. The proposal would reverse the unintended effect of the recent law change. This change is effective for sales and purchases made after the date of enactment. Next slide, please. The tax bill includes additional smaller items that update our tax code to respond to tax law changes, to changing business practices, and to recent court cases. These items include the following. I'm going to just walk through these. There's about six or seven of these that are a lot smaller, but I do just want to walk through so you have a sense of what these are. First one is to update Minnesota's itemized deduction for casualty and theft losses. This proposal updates Minnesota's itemized deduction for casualty and theft losses to clarify that the deduction is, number one, not allowed for amounts that are reimbursed by insurance. Number two, that the federal disaster area limitations do not apply. And finally, to add a deduction for losses that relate to for-profit transactions. The updates align Minnesota's deduction with the itemized deduction that was allowed on the federal return prior to the changes in the TCJA. The technical clarifying changes are effective on the day following final enactment, and the expansion to the for-profit transaction is effective retroactively to tax years beginning after December 31, 2018. The addition to income for federal domestic production activities deduction of agricultural cooperatives. This proposal disallows the federal deduction for domestic production activities, or DPAD, of agriculture and horticulture co-ops. The federal deduction was part of what was termed as the grain glitch caused by the TCJA. Minnesota had always required an addition for the federal DPAD, but that addition was repealed when the deduction was repealed by the TCJA. The change to reinstate the addition is effective for tax years beginning after December 31st, 2020. Changes to tax rate for non-admitted surplus lines insurance premiums. This proposal increases insurance premium tax from 2% to 3% if an insured procures insurance directly from an insurer instead of using a broker. Very few insureds are sophisticated enough to procure non-admitted insurance without a broker. This change will create a constant gross premium tax rate of 3% for non-admitted insurance, regardless of how the insurance was purchased. Update of the resident trust definition. This proposal updates the definition of a resident trust in response to Minnesota Supreme Court ruling in the Fielding versus Commissioner of Revenue and the U.S. Supreme Court case of the decision in North Carolina Department of Revenue versus the Kasner 1992 Family Trust. The proposal updates the resident trust definition to the full extent of due process by triggering resident status if sufficient relevant connections to Minnesota exist. This proposal is effective for tax years beginning after December 31, 2020. Update on iron bearing ore definition. This proposal expands the definition of iron ore bearing material related to the production tax in order to ensure that iron ore mining activities stemming from a new process related to lump ore is subject to the production tax. Update conversion rate for self-haulers. This proposal changes the self-hauler construction debris tax rate language to make it consistent with the commercial generator construction debris tax rate language. In 2017, the conversion unit for construction debris for commercial generators of non-mixed municipal solid waste was updated from per ton to per cubic yard. Parallel changes to the self-hauler construction debris conversion method were not made. As a result, the per ton to per cubic yard tax rate tax rate conversions are no longer parallel, and the self-hauler construction debris method for converting per ton tax rates to per cubic yard tax rates are less accurate. Sustainable Forest Incentive Act, or the SFIA program classification modification. This proposal reduces the number of acres needed to be split classified when 2B rural vacant land is enrolled in the Sustainable Forest Incentive Act program. The split classification statute and the SFIA statute conflict, and this proposal brings them into alignment. Aid recertifications. This proposal updates various responsibilities of the Commissioner of Revenue related to state aid calculations, certification, and payment. And before I wrap up, the last thing I just want to just mention is the fact that this tax bill does not include conformity to the federal tax changes that have been enacted since the last time the state tax code conformed to the Internal Revenue Code and updated to December 31, 2018. So with that, I'll take a breath and I'll say thank you for the time to present the governor's tax budget and tax bill today. And now we are happy to answer any questions at this time.
Thank you very much, Commissioner Doty and Assistant Commissioner Fishman. And we do have some questions. Representative Swazinski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And this question would be to Commissioner Doty. Just kind of looking at some of the corporate taxation proposals being moved forward by the governor, if it's a industry that, has got enough market share, it just simply passes the cost of those increased taxes to their consumers, does the governor still support those corporate taxes? Or will you still keep kind of pushing forward with those?
Commissioner Doty.
Chair Marquardt, committee. So the governor's tax proposal does tax corporations that have made profits on sales in Minnesota. And I will say that that the governor is not there's no information that the governor is trying to put certain corporations in a different bucket than other corporations. This is truly about C corporations that have done well during the pandemic, and the governor is asking that these corporations, along with some of the wealthiest Minnesotans, help pay their fair share for the investments needed with regard to working families, our children, and small businesses. The one thing I think that's also important to note is that when we start looking at how businesses potentially pass on the tax increase, if you will, one of the things that I've learned looking at past incidence analysis that our tax research folks have done is that the tax increase is passed along really in four kind of buckets. One bucket would be potentially to consumers. Another bucket would be potentially to workers. Another bucket would be to shareholders. And then finally, a portion of that will also potentially be exported. And all of that depends on the type of corporation, that depends on the market, on some of the market realities where that corporation is doing business. The thing that we also know is that initially, the impact of the tax increase is not felt like instantaneously. And so initially, probably the shareholders will probably feel the impact initially. And then as things start to settle down then businesses would then have to make some economic choices. And they would have to decide how that, what the markets will potentially bear within the areas that they do business. That would include the retail markets, that would include the labor markets. So I think it's a long answer, but I'm just trying to say that I think it's difficult to just to talk about how businesses simply pass the tax increase and the impact of that onto consumers.
Mr. Chair?
Representative Swazinski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And just another follow-up question to Commissioner Doty. Really do appreciate the information you're sharing with the committee. Could you give an example of a business that you know, you feel like specifically is not paying their fair share currently and under your proposal would pay more of their fair share, like a type of business, like, you know, what kind of businesses are we talking about?
Commissioner Doty.
Chair Marquardt, committee, I can't name a specific business. I do know, and I think we all probably know, that there are businesses within various business sectors in Minnesota that have done okay during the pandemic. There are also businesses in other sectors, like for instance, the hospitality industry, that have had a really hard time. So again, I think the governor is asking that businesses that have seen a profit during this pandemic and have done well, along with some of the wealthiest Minnesotans, asking them to pay their fair share so that these investments and working families, supporting working families, getting our kids back on track for learning, and small businesses, we can pay for those.
Representative Swazinski.
Yeah, thank you, Chair Marquardt. You know, I'm just thinking, you know, in my mind, you know, one business that I've heard has done exceptionally well during the pandemic is like Super Value. You know, they've got a large center kind of in the western part of the suburbs where they do a lot of distribution, a lot of sales. If a grocery store chain's profits are exceptionally, would the tax go to grocery stores?
Commissioner Doty.
Chair Marquardt, committee. Again, I think that this proposal centers around C corporations that have experienced profits over the last year. And that would be regardless of whatever industry specifically that business represents. I just want to make that clear. And I don't know how, for instance, Super Value is organized, but again, it's for C corps that have experienced profits.
Representative Swazinski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So let's just say the grocery store chain, whether it be Lunds and Byerly's, whether it be Aldi, whether it be Hy-Vee, whether it be Super Value, if they're a C corp and they've had profits during the pandemic that are higher, there wouldn't be an exemption on people's groceries or that sort of thing. They would have to pay their fair share. And then I have a follow-up question. So the foreign income. So are companies, if they import income from international sales, according to this new bill, will they also be able to import their losses and write off their taxes if they have international losses, or is it only profits?
Commissioner Doty.
Could you repeat the first part? I want to focus on your first part of your question first, and then I'll get to the foreign income piece. I'm sorry.
Yeah, so I think
Representative Swazinski.
So my question was, so, you know, if an Aldi or a Super Value or a Hy-Vee had profits and they're as a C corp, then the taxes would go up on those grocery store chains.
Commissioner Doty.
Again, the answer would be, at this point, would be yes. Any C corp that would have made profits over this last year would be subject to the increased tax. Yes, they would.
And then the question from Representative Swazinski on the foreign income, does that also include if there's a loss? Commissioner Doty.
Yeah. So the answer to that would be they would be able to write off those losses.
So I'm going to, Representative Swazinski, we can come back to you. There might be others that have other questions too. Is that all right?
Sounds good, Mr. Chair. Thank you for the opportunity to ask the questions to Commissioner Doty.
Yeah, you bet. Thank you. And when I went to my gallery screen, I noticed that our lead, Representative Davids, had his hand up, and normally I would have gone to him first, so I missed that. So I'm going to go to Representative Davids at this time. Representative Davids.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I was going to mention that, but I just won't bring it up.
I missed it, Mr. Chair.
No, that's just fine. I find Commissioner Doty's answers horrifying. And the only solace I have, Mr. Chairman, is that the good thing about the governor's proposed budget is we do recycle the papers written on, so that's my environmental vote. But I hope people are listening. So if a company or people work, their C Corp worked hard, and actually made money, which I thought business was supposed to do so they can pay taxes, they're going to be penalized, and they're going to pay more because they worked hard and made a profit. That is simply horrifying to me. But again, the solace is this, you know, we have to hear the governor's budget because we're nice, and, you know, I've done this many years. But, you know, profit is bad, I guess, because if you make something, you're going to get nailed, and that is frightening to me. How does the governor's plan help small business?
Commissioner Doty.
So there are a number of provisions in the governor's proposal that will help small businesses. And some, I just want to just note a couple here. So the governor is proposing a small business forgivable loan program that he's proposing $50 million investment in that, increasing access to broadband, another $50 million there, and a program entitled Launch Minnesota to help startup businesses. Those are just some of there's a number of programs as part of the proposal that specifically address small businesses and helping support them.
Representative Davids.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. To Mr. Commissioner Doty, why would a business start up in this state if this budget passed? Because if you start up a business and work hard, we're just going to nail you more than anybody else. It makes no sense to me. Now, we also have to realize, Mr. Chairman and Commissioner Doty, that small businesses, there's a lot of small businesses that are C-Corps. So what you're doing is you're raising taxes by tremendous amounts on small businesses. Farmers, a lot of farmers in my district are C-Corps. They're not that big, but they've decided to organize like C-Corps. So you're nailing small farmers, you're nailing small businesses because they're working hard trying to make a profit. This is the most unfair proposal, and it's not even balanced, but it's the most unfair proposal I've ever seen, and I've seen a lot of these. But again, my solace is it's never going to happen. You know, I thought all this is a budget proposal of class warfare. I thought because we passed the tax the rich budget, which half of the tax increases went on the poor in 2013, I thought we were over this. I thought we took care of it in 2013. I thought we took care of it, but apparently not, because we're right back at it again. When we go to the premium tax, going from 2 to 3%, does that create retaliation amongst carriers in Minnesota? Mr. Chairman, Commissioner Doty.
Yeah. Commissioner Doty.
Chair Marquardt, committee, no. There's no retaliation there. If you're speaking of the specialized insurance that I was speaking of at the end of the year, no. This is just making sure, creating a consistency, quite frankly, just making sure that irregardless of how insurance is purchased, that the same premium tax is assessed. Right now, if a company procures insurance directly from the market, they're getting a break on that. And those are really the larger companies specifically. And that's different than corporations that are, or companies that are going through a broker. So this creates consistency more than anything.
Representative Davids.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman and Commissioner Doty. In the tax business, I have concluded that more is less and less is more. The more you tax, the less you get. The less you tax, the more you get. So we're kind of like we're trying to nail the goose that lays the golden egg. The corporations that are out there providing the jobs, providing the income, we're going after them. And that's just so wrong at so many levels. And the big thing about this tax proposal, which, of course, isn't going anywhere, is the regressivity. I can't believe how much this raises taxes on the poorest and the poor and middle income earners. I've never seen anything like this. I mean, we're in a pandemic created a lot of the business problems have been created by the governor's orders. I mean, that's obvious. And now we're trying to fix it. But boy, this doesn't fix a thing here. There's disincentives in here. You're taxing folks more. You tax income more, you're going to have less income. You tax it less, you're going to have more income. Because if people can keep more of their income, they will work harder and have more income. So I'm just very thankful. And Commissioner Doty, thank you for your presentation. But I'm just so thankful that this thing is going nowhere. Thank you, Mr. Chairman and Commissioner Doty.
Thank you. Commissioner Doty, any comments on that?
Mr. Chair, committee, one of the things that I'm really looking forward to, and I hope you all are too, is the incidence analysis that will be coming out probably sometime mid-March, early April. And that's where we'll be able to start to see the progressivity or the regressivity of this tax proposal. I will tell you that when we've gone through and started doing some initial look at this, I think there very well could be a chance that this is a much more progressive overall proposal than not. But again, we have to wait and see what the analysis shows.
Representative Howard.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have a couple questions. And Representative Davids mentioned the unfairness, and I'm glad he mentioned the word unfair or fair, because that's what I'm trying to wrestle with this question before us about how we resolve a budget deficit and balance our budget and deal with what's been unfair outcomes during the pandemic. So I want to actually go back a little further, and I have a question about the 2017 federal tax bill. Do you have a sense of how that federal tax bill impacted folks versus at the very top of the income scale or corporations versus lower and middle income Minnesotans?
Commissioner Doty.
Chair Marquardt, committee, that's a very good question. The 2017 tax bill, the TCJA, provided a lot of very good corporate benefits specifically. One of the big things that came from that was a reduction in the overall federal marginal tax rate going from 35% down to 21%. And that includes a host of additional tax benefits that came from that. I think there's information that would show that as a result of that, did corporations did they hire more people? How did that impact the economy? I think that maybe some of the jury on that is out, but I think that there is no question that corporations benefited specifically from that tax bill. There's no question about that.
Representative Howard.
Yep. Thank you, Mr. Chair. And as I understand, some of the folklore of the magic of lower taxes that we were from Representative Davids, that didn't really come to fruition with the federal tax bill. We haven't seen a huge increase in wages. We haven't seen a big drop in prices, a benefit for consumers. We have seen a larger shift in wealth to the very rich, which doesn't seem very fair. Fast forward a little bit to this pandemic, which we know has not been fair. We've seen lower and middle income Minnesotans hit much harder than the wealthy, and we've seen our small businesses hit much harder than our large corporations. I'm curious if you could share what we know about sort of the current state of play in terms of effective tax rates between low and middle income Minnesotans and the very wealthy Minnesotans. And as well, if you could comment on the effective tax rate for our small and smallest businesses and our large and multinational corporations, generally what we know about the effective tax rates of each and how they differ.
Commissioner Doty.
Chair Marquardt, committee, I really appreciate that question. There's aspects of that question that are fairly complicated. I would have to get some additional information to fully answer your question. A couple pieces of that I can tell you is that given right now, I'm going to focus on some of the larger Minnesota corporations. Right now we've got this flat tax rate of 9.8%. Information that we've gathered from our information shows the average effective tax rate for these corporations is roughly around 8%. And so that's as we start to look to increase that. And that's largely due to, Minnesota's generous tax exclusions, deductions, and exemptions that a lot of these corporations are able to take advantage of. So that part I can specifically speak to. But we would have to get some additional information to start comparing, the effective tax rate of larger and smaller corporations. I wouldn't have that kind of information.
Representative Howard.
Thanks. Just one more question. And as I understand, especially as relates to income taxes, the top 5% and top 1% definitely pay a much lower percentage of their income in taxes. And the research I've seen suggests the same for businesses. And so my last question is, how does the governor's tax bill contemplate this unfairness? From my read, currently we have a system where low and middle income Minnesotans are paying a larger share of their income and taxes. They're also the folks who have been hurt the most during this pandemic versus wealthy Minnesotans and our large corporations who are paying less in taxes, who got the largest tax breaks that we've ever seen in this country just a few years ago and who are doing quite well. And how does the governor's tax budget contemplate that unfairness?
Commissioner Doty.
Chair Marquardt, committee, all I can say is I believe you're right. That's one of the reasons why the governor's package specifically focuses on those who have been hit the hardest, whether that be working families, whether that be small businesses, whether that be our children, and specifically includes proposals that directly affect those groups. And the thing that I think is also important about the governor's proposal is that the package specifically as the proposals looked at as a package really is where you start to get the fuller impact, particularly for low to middle income Minnesotans. So whether that is expansion of the first tier, whether that is related to the change in the working family credit, the I-10s pieces related to those, all of those things are very, are very much part of that overall package. I would say that I agree with that assessment that you gave, and I believe the governor's proposals are really targeted at those groups specifically.
Thank you, Commissioner. Thank you, Representative Howard. Anything further?
Just one quick comment that I know other folks have questions too. Thank you for those comments. And I just have to mention that as we have this discussion, I just want to remind members that for those that are going to decree these tax positions, just know that our 83% of our state budget goes for education, healthcare that largely serves people with disabilities and seniors, and public safety. And Representative David said that he was frightened by how this would impact our millionaires and billionaires. Well, I'm frightened about how this is going to impact our schools, people with disabilities, and folks' health care. And so I just appreciate the governor's budget and looking at this whole package in a way that is ultimately fair. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Representative McDonald.
Mr. Chair, thank you. Say, just a comment on Representative Howard's comments regarding the budget. In 2013, the Democrats passed one of the largest tax increases in the history of Minnesota, and it was for education, welfare, and public safety. Look at what our state is right now in our education. Kids are stuck at home. They're failing. They have mental health issues, physical issues. They're not able to go to school. They're performing very, very badly. It's affecting them. It's affecting my kids. Look at the welfare system. More money yet, throw more at it. The governor wants to do this time. And yet we got homeless camps all over our state, all over the Twin Cities area, and some of our hotels in St. Paul. More money for public education. You mean $2 billion increase in 2013 wasn't enough? You want to increase taxes even more? Look at the public safety today. seems to be we always want to throw more money at the problems, more money to solve the problem. And we are in worse condition today than we have been in the years that I've been in the legislature, the short 10 years. When I came to the legislature, it was a $34 billion budget, was the projected budget. Here today, almost $54 billion in less than 10 years. And look at the state of our country. Look at the state of our state right now. More money for education, welfare, and public safety. More money does not mean that these areas will be improved. The facts are the Minnesota's tax rates are already some of the highest in the United States. Tax hikes and tax rates do not appear to drive tax increases or tax revenues, rather. It's just, it's unfathomable. And I get a kick out of some of the slides that Commissioner Doty projected here. Curbing nicotine use. We want to put yet another dollar tax increase on nicotine, on cigarettes. And yet they want to curb taxes, but yet their increased revenue is $71.75 million in fiscal year 2022 and $67 million in fiscal year 2023. That seems to be just an oxymoron there. Same thing with the income tax, the fifth tier now. You know, when we had our fourth tier a couple of years ago, that the highest in the fourth tier, of course, we are one of the highest state in the nation for its personal income tax, and monies do move. If you'd bother to look at some of the data from the Center of American Experience and the Tax Foundation, if you have money, you will move, and many Minnesotans will move out of the state of Minnesota and have and will continue, especially with this fifth tier. But at the same slide with the tax increases on the fifth tier and the income tax and the capital gains tax, the next slide was the investment, angel investment, $7 million for angel investment. As if a new startup company would stay here in Minnesota with one of the highest tax states in the nation. Why would you open a business here? Oh, we're going to give you some money for angel investment, but we're going to tax you. Our corporate tax rate, if passed, will be above Pennsylvania, New Jersey, and possibly even Iowa. Heck, Minnesota will be above California, and people are leaving California. I'm very disappointed in the governor's proposal. Tax, tax, tax. How about spending cuts? Every one of us who have experienced such hard times in this pandemic, and if you have a business like I do, you've cut spending. You didn't continue to spend more than you brought in. I'm glad that Representative Davids mentioned that this will not become law. It'll not come to pass. Minnesotans are taxed enough. We spend too much. We need to cut spending. That's what we need to do if we want to have economic growth during these hard times and if we want to have any recovery. We simply are spending too much. We're also one of the highest spending states in the nation. So, Mr. Chair, I hope that you are not in agreement with this governor's proposal of large tax increases with little spending decreases. And thank goodness that we got the Senate that'll come to some common sense and not even pass this or even see this for that matter. So that's all I have to say for now.
I need to go back to Representative Davids because his name was invoked by Representative Howard. So Representative Davids.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name was used in vain, and I like that rule that I started some years ago. So I won't mention any names, but the person that did mention my name apparently was not listening. He misquoted me. I hope it wasn't intentional. I hope it was just a simple error because he doesn't understand. But the folks I was talking about was not the millionaires and billionaires and how much can we save them. I remember talking about small businesses that are C-Corps that are not millionaires and billionaires, and we're going to tax the tar out of them. Small farmers that are subchapter C. I don't think folks understand business structure because they've never had one or been in one. So I was misquoted terribly there. With the cigarette tax increase of a buck, I remember a former commissioner had to come to me begging for money for the smoking hot tobacco cops because you could fill up a U-Haul in a Suburban in North Dakota, buy the cigarettes, pay their tax, bring it back here, and make over $1 million profit, which many people don't understand, but make $1 million profit on that 8x10 U-Haul and a Suburban. So they're talking about having smoking hot tobacco cops at the border because our rates were so terribly high. This bill, which is going nowhere, is a kick them when they're down bill, a result of businesses hurting because of the governor's orders. That's what this is. I think we shouldn't spend a whole lot of time on it. And if you're going to talk about me, please mention my name, because the one that did talk about me was so far out of line and was misquoting. That's not appropriate on the Tax Committee, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Schultz.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to make a few comments. My first comment is that what Minnesotans really want is they want high quality education, good roads, strong infrastructure, and they want to make sure they're safe, so public safety is an issue. And what we can get with additional revenue from the state is to make those key investments. Right now, more than ever, we need to invest in our public health infrastructure. And you know, it takes revenue to make these investments, but that's why people move to Minnesota. I didn't see a big outflow of people when we reformed our taxes in previous years. There are no studies that verify that people move because of their income tax rate. So those investments are key to get businesses to come to Minnesota. I think that we should, you know, think about what the revenue purchases, and we're so far behind in making those key investments, particularly in public health. That investment, for example, making it cheaper to afford health insurance, especially for those small businesses, those are the things that we should be talking about, where we can raise revenue to make healthcare more affordable, especially for small businesses. Secondly, I think we need to be careful when we use the terms regressive and progressive. If we use the strict definitions of progressivity or regressivity, there are very few tax revenue generators that are considered progressive. So I think we need to be clear when we use that what we're referring to. And my third point is that this is no time to have an austerity policy. When we have the economy we have now, we need to make sure that we can inject money, and that could be government money, into the system and help families that have struggled during the pandemic. So I'm eager to talk more about this tax bill, and hopefully we can come up with some bipartisan support to make these key investments in the state. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Representative Mortensen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Boy, there's a lot to go through with this. I guess I just want to first say there is no government money. It's all taxpayer money. But then I do have a question for the commissioner. Commissioner Doty, I heard you say several times that the governor is asking these companies to pay their fair share. So my question is, if this tax plan goes through, will this tax increase be voluntary?
Representative Commissioner Doty.
Chair Marquardt, committee, no, if this passes, this would not be voluntary.
Representative Mortensen.
Thank you. Yeah, I figured as much, but the language is deceptive. I'm sure that this would come down with the full force of law should this tax plan become reality. And there's been comments about the C Corp. My old business was a C Corp. We had less than 10 employees. I sold the business about 2 years ago, but that is a great example of a small business. And I'm not a millionaire or billionaire, that's for sure. And this is not just going after big businesses. and then on taxes being treated as a cost, I mean, anybody who is a wise or shrewd business person is going to treat their taxes as a cost of doing business, and they will be passing that cost on to the consumer. So anybody in the public that has been watching this tax will get passed through to the consumer, and you're going to see the cost of goods and services go up undoubtedly. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Representative Joaquin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I didn't know if you wanted to save comments to the end. I have more of a comment than a question.
Well, go ahead. I've got like four on the list, and people have been a combination of comments and questions, and I'm giving a lot of leeway, so go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll be brief. Just a reminder that the governor did not cause the pandemic, a virus did. that we're having a K-shaped recovery that is disproportionately affecting the working poor. Those are the same frontline workers that have kept our grocery stores open, took care of our loved ones in nursing homes, and delivered your packages. That our schools have been open, and everyone from nutrition staff to our teachers and administrators have been working crazy hours under historic circumstances to deliver education to our students. Those same students who will drive our future economy. It is our responsibility as elected leaders to help our state recover after a global pandemic, especially those who have been hurt the hardest. They want us to work together to provide just a little relief during this difficult time. It's more complicated than trying to score a quick headline with a quippy comment. So I'm hoping that we could come together and do what we need to do for Minnesotans. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Representative Garofalo.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. First of all, sound check. Can you hear me okay?
We can.
Unfortunately, you can hear me, right? Yes. So, Mr. Chairman, I feel like perhaps there may be an alternate secret budget that is being debated that has not been presented to us, because I keep hearing about all this talk about defending the low and middle income taxpayers, but this bill raises taxes on them. I mean, we have information from our, and maybe we should defer to nonpartisan research, but there's about 400,000 tax returns that are below the first tier bracket threshold that don't get a tax reduction because of the working family credit changes. So there's this donut hole. Like, yes, there are people that benefit from the working family credit changes. There are those who are towards the top half who will benefit from the extension of the first tier expansion. Well, there's a donut hole in the middle of a bunch of people who are getting their taxes raised and are not wealthy. They're not high buck. These are the working poor. So, Commissioner Doty, are you aware of that fact?
Commissioner Doty.
Chair Marquardt, committee, what I can specifically say is that 99.3% of all Minnesotans will see no tax increase at all. The increase in tax will be on that top 0.7% that we've talked about earlier. So that's the part I have to make sure I consistently say that.
Representative Garofalo.
Mr. Chairman and Mr. Doty, well, then perhaps you could enlighten us. I understand that someone who benefits from the tax reductions at the top half of the first, when we expand the first tier, there's some tax relief there. I also understand that there are people who, when they get the working family credit, as a result of that additional credit, they get a lower amount. But for those people who are above the working family credit benefit, but they're too poor to benefit from the first tier expansion, how are their taxes being reduced?
Commissioner Doty.
So again, I don't think, I'm sorry, Chair Marquardt, committee, I did not say that 99.3% of taxpayers would see a reduction. I said they would see no tax increase. So there are people that will see no change at all in their taxes.
Okay, so Mr. Chairman,
Representative Garofalo,
Mr. Doty, in using those terms, are you talking about who collects the taxes, or are you talking about who pays the taxes? Because we know that there are regressive tax increases that get passed on to the working poor. So is it who's collecting the taxes or who it is paying the taxes when you cite those numbers?
Commissioner Doty.
Chair Marquardt, committee, again, I just want to be clear. There is, for people who are in the third tier, there would be no change in their tax.
Representative Garofalo.
I didn't bring up the third tier. I don't know. I don't.
Yeah, I think here's what I'm hearing is that the working family credit goes up to a certain income level. It might be 45, 50, depending on the number of kids and so forth. And if you benefit on the extension of the first tier, if you're a family of four, you take the standard deduction with two kids, that's $33,400 of exclusion plus around the $39,000. You got to be around $72,000 to benefit from that. So there's a donut hole, I think, as Representative Garofalo, between 50 and 72, I think is kind of what you're probably getting at. The thing to remember, too, is that our tax revenues don't exist in a vacuum. They pay for things. So even though someone may not benefit under the tax code portion of things, they certainly can benefit under the investment portion of things. So, you know, it depends if you're talking just the tax policy side or the budget overall. Well, Representative Garofalo, did I get to your point?
A little bit, but I guess, Mr. Chairman, I'm not here to offer the DFL political advice, right? But if you want to tax rich people, then just go tax rich people. Why are you taxing poor people? I'm not saying I agree with your fifth tier idea. I thought the fourth tier was dumb. I mean, the fifth tier is like stupidity on steroids. So I'm not advocating for it, but if you guys are interested in remodeling equity as redistribution, right? If you want to do that, then just tax rich people. What, don't tax poor people and lower and middle income folks, people like the governor's doing. I can defer to Mr. Williams from our nonpartisan research on this, but the donut hole is real. You guys are, this proposal raises taxes on poor people. I don't know why you're doing it, but it's not going to become law. So who cares? No big deal. Thank you.
Commissioner Doty, any comments on that?
Chair Marquardt, committee. Again, I think we can lay out that who's in the first tier and relative to the taxes paid. I think that the thing that I want to make sure I'm clear about is that the difference between raising taxes on individuals, particularly those in the first tier, is very different than having no tax. No change in their tax at all.
Representative Gomez.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess, you know, my question was sort of answered because I did want to get at this piece about how many taxpayers will see an increase versus staying the same or a decrease. And I heard from the commissioner that 99.3% of people will not see an increase of ratepayers, right? Not people, just people who pay taxes won't see an increase in their taxes. So that was kind of the point that I wanted to ask about, because we were talking about the relative, you know, progressivity of this proposal, and I think that that's an important point. The other thing that I wanted to say is, you know, it's kind of to get back to, like, we're not, you know, a number of members have brought up the fact that we're not talking about taxes in a vacuum. We talk about that, about facing a budget deficit and what are we going to do about it? And are we going to cut schools? Are we going to cut health care for disabled people and elders? These are the questions. Are we going to cut funding for infrastructure? And I mean, this has been my observation. You know, I worked at a city for 5 years before I joined the legislature, and you know, it was interesting as I learned about my city's budget and then also, you know, kind of about the overall property tax levy between the different taxing jurisdictions that, that you know, Minneapolis ratepayers or taxpayers pay, homeowners and other property owners pay. So, you know, as a renter, I wasn't really familiar with that at that time. And, you know, my observation was that, you know, historically what's happened is that when the state facing a budget deficit has decided to cut schools and cut funding for infrastructure and cut funding for public safety and cut funding for cities and counties and the people who deliver the services that our residents experience on a day-to-day basis, a lot of times with funding from us, that those things still have to happen. Like, our kids still need to go to school. The roads and bridges in our communities still need to be maintained. And so what happens? They turn to the property tax levy. So over and over again, over my time, you know, as a taxpayer, I've voted yes for, you know, on my for a property tax levy for our schools over and over and over and over again. And then I get to the state and I learn more about, over time, what the state investment has been in education as a percentage of the overall cost. And it's dropped precipitously, particularly since 2002. And so what you see is this correlation between the state deciding to balance the budget deficit on the backs of children and the disabled and the elderly and our bridges and our roads and our public safety apparatus. Instead of asking those who are doing really well in this economy to pay just a little bit more, right? And 1% is not an exorbitant, ridiculous addition to a tax. It's relatively modest. But when we decide, when the state decides to balance our budget on the backs of the people, then the locals and the counties and the school districts have to step up and figure out how to make that up. And they make it up by turning to the same people who are already overburdened by the economic conditions that exist that we talk about a lot in this committee and in others. So I guess I just want to say that when we decide not to do our jobs, we just pass that along to our school boards. We pass it along to our locals. Finally, I guess I just want to say that, I definitely understand the point about, there are smaller businesses that are organized as C corporations, and I think that it's important to have that conversation about how, what the impact of, of raising taxes on them are, and we're going to continue to do that. But I guess I just want to say that these are the largest companies that have made the most during the pandemic. And, Super Value's CEO makes $5.9 million in compensation. And we don't tax groceries in Minnesota. So, that's just a side point. But, we have situations where a lot of these C corporations do have high CEO compensation, high stakeholder returns. So I'll just stop there. I really appreciate it. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
All right. Thank you. Members, we have to stop at 2:30 because of the public and the information. So I'm going to go to, there's both Democrats and Republicans that have their hand raised, but unfortunately, we're not going to be able to get to you. So Commissioner Doty, final comments.
Chair Marquardt, committee, first of all, I just want to thank you very much for giving me this opportunity today. I fully understand that elements of this proposal are worthy of further discussion and worthy of debate. But again, I think the point that I want to leave you with is that the governor's proposal specifically is intended to support those who have truly been hurt the most as a result of this pandemic. And as someone said, the governor didn't create the pandemic. At all. A virus created that. But we have to get the economy back on track. And the way we do that is not by cutting. We can't cut our way through to get the economy back. We've got to create investments. And those who've been hit the hardest is the right place for us to start with that. So with that, Mr. Chair, I just thank you so much for this opportunity and thank the committee.
Thank you, Commissioner. Members, we will be revisiting. This bill will be up probably in a couple weeks with language, and members will have a chance to comment more on that. So the schedule is next Tuesday and Thursday. We're going to hear bills next Tuesday. Some bills on Thursday. We're looking at the public safety sales tax exemptions. And then the next week, hopefully, we'll have the governor's language on the tax bill. So again, Commissioner Doty, thank you so much for the presentation on the governor's tax policy. And members, thanks for the good, lively discussion today. That's what Tax Committee is all about. And everyone have a great weekend. Members, we are adjourned.